Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought a reading list tonight for your listening and pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Tonight, we're going to delve into the idea of life, how it affects us, how it changes us, how it can offer us a rebirth, and sometimes how it impacts us so deeply that it changes who we are or leaves this mark upon our soul. I am going to remind the people that have called in to please be on mute. Whenever you're not speaking, it helps the show flow a little bit more smoothly and lets us make sure that everybody is heard when they need to. But With that being said, I'm super excited to dive into the poetry tonight. And I believe, Faith, I'm told you are here lurking in the shadows with me.
I'm here.
Hey, how are you tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad you're here. And then I hear that we also have area code 619 who's on air with us. And who are we speaking with?
Hello, this is Michael Mihalas. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
Good. And I wanted to wish everybody a very happy Easter, or if it's not too late.
Not at all. Not at all. It's definitely still Easter for me. So with that, I'm going to dive in. Faith, would you be kind enough for me to let you read for your read for us your poem first?
Sure.
Awesome. And I'm going to post that in the group, and we can get this show on the road.
Rebuilding by Faziana. Piecing together the surviving remnants, recovering who I was in small segments, rehabilitating lost corners of my mind, didn't know they were there until in a bind. Counseling for anxiety, holding me hostage, locked in my own mind, chained to the past and emotional carnage, fear has left me blind. Physiotherapy for balance and strength, never felt comfortable in the gym. To regain independence, I'd go any length, most helpless I've ever been. Craniosacral aligns my energy, surprise magic for my senses, integral to my recovery, lowers my mind's defenses. Massage weekly to prevent atrophy, so many muscles seizing, RMT has established stretching strategy, not spa-like pleasing. A team of neurology specialists argue each medication has cost for its value, side effects worse than the original symptom, vicious cycle of pharmaceutical system. Practice speaking, knowledge seeking, self-taught, recapturing thought. Build the new me from the top down, treading water, but I won't drown. End poem.
Oh, Faith, I absolutely love this poem because to me it really shows the determination and strength of will. It's really easy, and I've seen it far too many times where something has happened to someone, be it a veteran, a cancer, someone who's diagnosed cancer, and they just said, no, this is too much. I'm not going to do this. They take the word of, you know, a doctor saying, you're not going to ever walk again. And that's one thing that I kind of have a unique perspective on because my dad is a doctor. What's a doctor? He's retired. And so he always criticized because he's a radiologist, so he's not a general practitioner. He doesn't get to tell people what to do. He just tells them what's wrong with them. And he's always criticized other doctors because so often they will play God. They will look at the probabilities and say, well, this is what's going to happen. My best friend who has a baby in NICU, her babies were born at 22 weeks. One of my friends who's an OB, she was surprised they even intervened because at 22 weeks, they have less than a 10% chance of survival. And yet my nephew just celebrated his first Easter in the NICU, but his first Easter. And so I think that this poem has a really special voice. The capturing of yourself, that even though life gave you a hand that is hard, by all means, it is hard. And, you know, knowing what I know about you, knowing about what you've fought against and overcome, to me, it really shows the determination that you have even when so much falls back on you and relies on you, the dealing with the different medications that come with, you know, life and symptoms and diseases. Some of them aren't pretty. I mean, my grandma passed away from lung cancer, and the question was, did she want to do chemo or not? And she ended up not because she was stage 4. She wasn't going to recover from it. So she did radiation for the mets in her brain because the effects of chemo would be so much worse than just letting the disease take its course rather than prolong for a few weeks. And so thankfully that's not your physician. Thank God. Cause I would die without my faith. But to me, this poem just speaks of so much strength and so much beauty and an understanding of this is really, really hard, but I'm not giving it up. You know, this is not going to a spa, but I'm still going to do it. People who have not struggled with medical issues sometimes think, oh, yeah, you get a massage every week. Like, it's not a massage. And so people downplay what they do not know. But your poem, I think, really shines a light onto that struggle and really shows the beauty of your character, the strength, the will to come back, even when you feel like you've probably been tossed over a cliff. It is fantastic for sharing that.
Thank you, Victoria.
Of course. And Michael, what did you think?
I like the way this poem was laid out. I think the rhyming scheme is wonderfully done. I had a question. Is this poem autobiographical or semi-autobiographical?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is really, really good. Good title. What else? I think it was a very good poem, and I think in some cases I can empathize with the author, and that's it.
Thank you.
Beautiful comment. Thank you. And again, thank you, Faze. That it's always easier to write about things that don't affect us. And when we speak personally and from our heart, sometimes we leave a little bit extra of ourselves on the page. And this is just truly a beautiful piece. All right. So it is Easter, as we all know. And this is a write that was from last week, and it just seems so fitting for this week. And so we're going to go ahead and delve into this. I'm going to take this read. It is I Still Believe by the writer C. And it is a little bit more along the lines of a Christian perspective. So if that's not your taste, that's okay. But I still think that there's beauty in the sharing of that and the ability and the willingness to say, this is my faith, even if others disagree. And it's okay for everybody to believe what they want to believe. So this is I Still Believe by the writer C. I wasn't present to hear a word or see a thing. I wasn't there. I just wasn't there. Yet, I still believe. I wasn't around when he gave sight to the blind. I didn't attend the wedding where he turned water into wine. I didn't eat the fish or the bread. I wasn't in the crowd when he raised Lazarus from the dead. I didn't hear the words to the woman, go and sin no more. I wasn't there to hear him tell the world, love your neighbor. I wasn't in the upper room when the Holy Spirit came. And I wasn't in the mob calling Barabbas' name. I didn't see Pilate wipe the blood off his hands. And I never heard John say he was the Son of Man. I wasn't on the ship when Jesus fell asleep. I didn't hear Mary weep when they put the last nail in his feet. I didn't hear the thief cry, remember me. I wasn't in hell when he released the captives free. I wasn't there, never heard a word, yet I still believe. And Michael, would you start us off?
Oh, this is beautiful. As a Christian, I can really appreciate this poem. I was able to get every single reference in this poem, basically about the life and death and burial and resurrection of Jesus. And this is a great Easter message. You know, even though we weren't there to see all these events taking place, it's good that we can still believe. It reminds me of you know, several verses in the Bible, and I'm just, wow, this is a very good, bravo, very touching. Okay,
Great comment, Michael. Thank you. And Faze, what did you think?
I like the way that it frames it with a, I didn't hear, I wasn't there, I didn't see. There's a repetition to it. That's not exactly repetition because it changes the phrasing a little bit, but each stanza starts with I wasn't or I didn't, and then it kind of gets down into a biblical event and kind of the impact that that particular thing had. I like the variety that it showed. It wasn't just the miracles. It was also kind of the kindness to the people who may not have been expected to, like when it's talking about, like, go and don't sin anymore. I'm pretty sure that's when it was like someone was getting stoned for being promiscuous or something, and he let her go. I'm not sure exactly the Bible verse, but it's I like that it was not just the power side of things, but also the compassion side of things, because that's the part of the Bible that I would connect the most with, I think. So I liked that he touched on the different aspects of it, and the way that it was framed was really nice. I think it's a good expression of his faith.
That was a fantastic comment, Faze. Thank you. And I agree. To me, this really hits on Hebrews 11:1, that faith is being certain of what we hope for and or being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Faith is sometimes believed in without backing. In fact, I criticize my own faith because I'm a Christian, and I criticize it because I grew up in a household that's highly scientific. My dad's a doctor, my brother's a chemical engineer, my sister's a veterinarian, and I'm an accountant, so figure that one out. But even to this day, my father will sit at the computer, even with his father, my grandfather being a priest, my father will sit at the computer and try and find empirical evidence to support his faith as if that somehow validates it more. And yet the beauty of this poem is that faith has sometimes nothing to do with empirical evidence. It's not a debate to win. It is a core belief deep within yourself that you know and you hold secure. And I, you know, yes, this is a Christian poem. This does speak of all the various biblical stories. The wedding where Jesus turned water into wine, when he saved the prostitute stoning and said, do not sin anymore, go. He who without sin throws the first stone. Yes, we have Pontius Pilate washing his hands after the Jews, the Hebrews, demanded that Jesus be crucified. Yes, we have all those tenets of the Christian faith. And yet, if you think of anyone who believes in whatever they have faith in, they all have to believe, regardless of what everybody else says, regardless of what the world says. Sometimes I had a friend a long time ago who actually believed in the Greek gods, and you could argue, you know, well, if someone could hike up to Mount Olympus, we'd probably flown over it. Definitely no Greek gods living up there, and yet he still believed in them. And that's the beauty of faith, of being certain of what we hope for, of knowing what we cannot see. And this poem captures that beautifully, the way that things impact us, the way that faith impacts our life, and clinging to it for the hope and the certainty and the shelter of purpose. And sometimes that's all it is just there's got to be a bigger purpose that I just don't understand. I think it's a beautiful testament to faith. It's so beautifully fitting. And at the same time, he's done it in such a way that it is not, to me, overtly preachy. Because I do have parents that can sometimes be very preachy, as beautiful as they are. And so I think that he did a fantastic job in this for that. So thank you both for your comments. Thank you, the writers, for your beautiful poem. All right. And Michael, I'm going to have you read this next one. It's rather long, but it's called Elliptical Elevation by Luke J.R.
Yes. Hello? Yes.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we can hear
I was
you.
On mute, but let me go ahead and read this, okay?
Okay.
Beneath the summer green grass, bleeding through the darkest trees, shadows from the past breathe on her defrosted knees. Blonde bliss, pure with every visible strained eyeball, the trees have hands, claws that are sharper than any man's. Perhaps I shrouded you within the shadows breaking through. Vague paintings littered around her tiny soul, heart beating whole. Within the flesh of her little body, a heart bleeding whole. Veins twisted, diluting her eyes with the darkness that consumed us. There is a story from my mother, my grandmother, who believes in tales. From unearthly beings to monsters that were once held. Beneath the earth, there's always been a realm unlike our own. Tight spaces, familiar faces, coverings of all their disgraces. I remember my heart no longer filling there. Frost filled the air. Within every cold, frozen stare, I warn myself to be more aware. Hands of all the once great citizens thrown from every vent. I didn't know a butcher's dream would become heaven hell-bent. I didn't have it in my heart, tiny little creatures biting through my brain, sharp pincers, claws that sliced fresh flesh like machines, torn through the sight of a little girl's dreams. Father was shredded into pieces. Mother tried to escape through a vent. Her last pleading words fell silent. All walls isolating my vessel, my mind was being driven crazy by sudden sounds. You would hear a scream every few minutes, agonizing, thudding on the walls. There were shadows of all kinds of sizes, monstrous mandibles, people, and vises, crushed from flesh to bone, screams stretching out through echoed waves. One voice caught me by surprise. It was none other than a child full of flies, irritating buzzing within his hive-like eyes, oozing black liquids from all ungodly cries. It moved, sinking into the ground that became a vacuum of space. I could no longer breathe while I had to stare at his face. Shriveled up woman, flesh tangled around the cables that were mishandled. It reached the first stop. I have no idea how much time has flew by. I'm shaking in this box. No hands to hold me. Nobody to shake me out of this. There was a diary hidden in his little pocket, torn paper from the Bible. How could someone mishandle something so holy? Under the unlit moon, I was greeted by an orb of light. It was a planet within itself, gardens of white. Little hands grew from the tangled cables, buzzing intensified. Static imagery, visuals of all murders that had taken place on our soil. My father was branded the man who loved tinfoil. Wear your tinfoil hat. Sit between my reality and yours. I've just found children stretched out, glued and mangled flesh to closed doors, vomiting all over the floors, bile within every pile that I dare to step by. Little did I know that within my heart an unborn whispering fly. It whispered to me that it won't make it out of here unless I die. But I held onto the shell of someone who I once knew. How did you end up here too? Shadows crept up the corner of your eyes, cruelty within every surprise. Cable started to look alive. Flesh became indescribable the further I ventured. Darkness. Sense of all vileness in the world. I could not imagine a happier time in my life. I reached the room that was being covered by thick veiny roots. arachnid-like creatures squeezed through many crevices of their bodies. I sprinted with the only light in my way. Sunken street lamps go working. Everything had fallen through. Earth had swollen the above lands. Living it breathed into itself as everything we once knew became new. Houses were unrecognizable. Rubble underground. A butcher's dreamland had started to burst to reality. I followed a shadow with 20 legs into a room where I rested my aching head. Little did I know that the moment I would breathe in, exhaling through this light. Beneath the crimson sea, there was a child within me. Beneath the world of white, I followed her footsteps that night. I was told there was a puncture in this child's beating heart. I didn't think much of whether she would depart, but I found myself in the bathroom, tearing myself apart. Within the reflection, projections of myself, all versions of oneself, nails tore through flesh. Water became pure red, darkening as I went to bed. My eyes were awoken to a bright light. Woman approached me in my dreams. She was holding a carcass of white. I stole her heart that night. Within the branches that scribbled all over the stairs, I followed her flesh to the edge of white washed out squares. As I looked deeper into her eyes, I found what they had done. Our world was no longer ours. It had been overrun. Hollowed out rooms, starvation was leading us to our doom. People went crazy under the died out sun. Colors of plenty. What had our people done? Unleashed darkness, fun. Light leaked through the starched white beast. I never knew that heaven was covered in yeast, had become east.
Beautiful read, Michael. Thank you. I actually really quite adore this poem, and it's really off topic in some ways. But this is one that I really wanted to get on the show a few weeks back and just hadn't been able to. And so I wanted to make sure we got it on the show. But in a way, it reminds me of this podcast called The Magnus Archive. And they talk about in this podcast fears. So there's the spider, there's the buried, there's the all-seeing eye, essentially. And they represent different fears within existence. I mean, the spider is the spider. Everybody knows arachnophobia. I'd argue it's probably one of the most well-known fears around us. For some reason, there's something about spiders, these teeny tiny creatures that terrify us. And it's the idea of these webs just kind of encompassing us, playing us like a doll. The eye that is always watching, that we can never hide from, that sees all the things that we do not want to see and forces us to be exposed. The buried for people who have basically been buried alive, the way that life just kind of buries us and destroys us. And there's so many more. They just finished like their fifth season. So, and it was the final season. But it's just this idea that in existence, there are these core tenets of destruction and loathing and these fears that want to take over us. And I see that in this poem, the way that fear and life can overrun us, that it can crawl into us at the darkest hours, things that we did not notice before. I've spoken about it on the show before, but I went through a really difficult moment in my life when one night I was talking with my boyfriend and he kept talking about her and referencing her and saying that she would take care of him. And mind you, he had stuff in his past that it made sense. And so I didn't question it. And he told me he'd call me the next morning. He told me that he loved me and never to forget it. And then the next morning I woke up to a phone call, but it wasn't him. It was my friend asking if I'd talk to him because they'd heard through the grapevine that he committed suicide. And life is like that. It strikes us in unsuspecting ways over us. Fear makes us wonder why we didn't see the things we did, why we ignored the obvious details And that little girl is that obvious detail, the puncture in her heart. Why didn't he see it? Why didn't they see it? And so I love this poem because it looks at the darker aspects of life. It looks at how we can allow phobias and traumas to control us. And they are those little flies that worm their way into us, the maggots that eat away our core nature, that we give up to the festering rot of trauma and wounds that we don't let go. To me, it's a really deep, well thought out piece, even if it is an exploration of the macabre and the more unfortunate aspects of life. It's really well done. And I do believe Pam is back with us. Hi, Pam. How are you tonight?
I am doing great. Wonderful night of poetry you have lined up. Michael did a great read of that one. It's, I got to say, no matter how the rest of the day goes, it's just nice to hang out and read and comment on poetry and take a breather.
Absolutely.
And how are you doing?
Well, I'm good. It's Easter. It's the end of Easter. So it's, you know, new work day, but I get to hang out with some of the most awesome people. So I cannot complain getting to start my week out this way. And with that being said, did you want to give some thoughts on this piece by Luke?
Oh, absolutely. As always, it is intelligent and thought-provoking, right? The whole idea of, to me, of looking beyond ourselves, of questioning the different realities that exist, the different potential for life forms that are out there. The realms of possibility are endless, and it's such stark and vivid imagery. And and you're right. You know, the life can just change in an instant. One moment you think we have all the time in the world to call somebody or spend time with them, and then the next, they're gone. And so that was powerfully said on your part there, Victoria. And as always, this is just an excellent write from Luke, and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. And I love that you remind us that there is that call to perspective outside of ourselves, because I think that we do get wrapped up in ourselves quite a bit. And I think society has done a really good job of that this last year. So that was a fantastic. And Faith, what did you think?
It was very spooky. Kind of gave me goosebumps. I think that he was smart to use the child figures in it, because they tend to strike an emotional chord. It's like when the child is suffering, somehow it seems like extra sad. And also when in like scary movies or stories, when it's the children who are evil, it's just like it adds that extra layer of fear. I don't know what it is, but it's like because you expect them to be so innocent, and then that has the buzzing with the hive-like eyes and the black liquid. I can imagine it, and it's quite terrifying. I thought he did a really good job at creating this horrible scene and making it real, like not realistic, but I felt like it was like around me. It was very intense.
That was an awesome comment. And you're right, it is spooky. I'm surprised that he only wrote it a month ago, because it does seem like it would fit so well with kind of that Halloween time. Not that there's any like particular time you can write a creepy poem, but I do love the way that he does capture the innocence of those children. Kids are some of the most amazing, innocent little things, and yet at the same time, they can be so terrifying as well. They do some of the creepiest things. And so to capture something that is typically perceived so innocent and to use it in such a way was just really skilled. And so I appreciate you mentioning that, Faith. And Michael, what did you think having read it?
Yes, hello. This poem seemed like it might be somebody's nightmare or like a bad dream. But this poem was very very descriptive. I mean, I could just visualize all these different images, you know, that the author tries to plant into our mind. And it was a little spooky or eerie, or think of another word that you can find in the thesaurus. But I thought it was, I mean, it was a little long, but, you know, length is not always the, I don't judge poems by their length. I think quality is better than quantity. So this is a very high poem in quality. I think it was great. I was wondering about the very last three lines where it says, "Light leaked through the starched white beast. I never knew that heaven was covered in yeast. Earth had become yeast." It's just those ringing. It was kind of made me wonder what the author was trying to say here. But I guess everybody is going to have their own opinion or perspective on this wonderful poem. So that's it for me.
Nice, beautiful comment, Michael. Thank you for that. And you're right, every poem and every poet is going to have their own interpretation, which is just, to me, it's what makes poetry beautiful. And it's what makes a person is able to leech information and impacts to themselves in each work. So thank you for that reminder. All right. And so next up, Pam, would you be so kind as to read Mamya's poem for us?
I would be happy to go ahead and get back to Late Night Poet, and there it is. I see Mamya is also taking on the National Poetry Writing Month challenge. Very cool. All right. And this is Ostara by Mamya, and it goes like this. Ostara held a party in her grand manor, along with the million one Jesuses, eggs, hunts, and bunny pettings, all around, God sharing the worship by the masses. One embodies fertility and rebirth. The other stands for resurrection and salvation. Both were forced to share one festival, Ostara's rites nearly forgotten by the tide of time. In a compromise, she relented so as not to fade into the void. So when you're hunting for AIDS, remember why we have Easter and poem.
Oh my goodness. I am in love with this. So fun fact, the rabbit was not the original Easter animal. The original animal this time was a Teutonic goddess named Ostara, and she was a bird, which is why eggs are part of that. There was fertility in there and all of that. And it was to celebrate the equinox. But as Christianity has done many, many times, holidays and days, religious days, important days, were kind of overrun by the Christian faith spreading. The church tried to Christianize things. Valentine's Day was a fertility holiday in Rome, in which the women would run through the streets naked and the men would whip them with the genitalia of goats. And afterwards they would all meet in their fertility goddess's temple, and there would be a huge orgy. And that Easter used to be the honor of the spring goddess, in this case, Ostara. Halloween was like Dia de los Muertos. It was a day where the veil between the worlds were thin and the dead could come through. Christmas, of course, the winter equinox. Christianity took things over. And in doing that, it has taken away from all the things that came before it. Funny enough, as I was leaving my parents today, my dad refused to say Happy Easter because it is technically a pagan holiday. It's not Christian to be Easter. Christian is the resurrection. But we've intermixed them so much. Christianity has intermixed them so much. And in doing so, we have stolen things. They have stolen things from other faiths and other religions. And truth be told, it's highly disrespectful. And so I love that Nanyang brings back the attention to the original purpose of this day, that once upon a time, there was a goddess of Stara, not that they aren't still here, for those who believe in it, not putting it down, but she brings back the story of Ostara. She brings back the reminder that this day was not originally a Christian day. It was one that was taken over with a million and one Jesuses, with egg hunts and bunny petting, and this idea that this wasn't a fertility holiday. This wasn't a celebration of new life, but it is. And I love that she reminded us of that in the most beautiful way she did, as a humble Ostara, just saying, hey, while you're out doing this, remember, it's just, it's absolutely beautiful. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I basically just echo what you said. You know, I was going to talk a little bit about the pagan roots of things, and you touched that. So I don't have a whole lot to add, but I really respect Mamia for showing kind of both sides. You know, she doesn't like speak out against Christianity exactly. It's not like a hateful message, but it's a recognition of the things that came before. And I really love the way that she did that. And I've always been fascinated by these ancient holidays and the rituals that came with them and all of that. So I love to see someone recognizing that today.
Absolutely. And I agree, you know, just I think that we have to sometimes recognize things that people want to ignore, that what likes to be good does not always do good things. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So, thank you for that, Faith, truly. And Michael, what did you think?
Tom had a good interesting topic, and I do know about the pagan origins of a lot of our Christian holidays. A lot of people don't realize how the date for Easter always changes every year. Sometimes it's in late March, sometimes it's in early April, and sometimes it's a little bit later in April. Later in April. Do you know why? Because I know the answer. How you can tell? How you can know what day of what the date of Easter will be?
So we're not here to discuss theology, but that's a great topic of discussion later on.
Sure thing. All right. And anyways, I really think the poem was good, and I hope to read more from this author.
Absolutely, Mamia is just fantastic. And Pam, having read it, what did you think?
I really appreciated and enjoyed this. It was a wonderful brevity. I liked, learning about the history. Of course, a lot of this I already knew, but, I like that she is very informative. And as Afasiana said, she there's not a taking a side. It's more like just observing all the things that are going on. And what I think is wonderful is how everybody is, able to take out of and give back to holidays whatever it is they want to. You know, like for some people it's about the worship of spring, for others it's about the rising of Christ, and for some people there's not even a religious aspect to it of any kind. It's simply an opportunity to to spend time with family and friends. And then there's people like me who it's just an opportunity to get chocolate 50% off the next day.
We got Valentine's Day, we got Christmas, we got Easter, all the good candy holidays, Halloween.
Exactly. Amen to that, sister. This is a wonderful rite. Very well done.
Oh, goodness. And I love that you mentioned that, because so many people come from different faiths and different backgrounds and holidays, whether you're Christian or not, and you follow the Christian faith with their holidays or you don't, that it doesn't take away from the beauty of the day and the days that we celebrate. I actually have a friend who's atheist, and she had an existential crisis because she was like, you know, Christmas is a Christian holiday. Am I supposed to celebrate it? And I was like, you know what? Christmas is going to be whatever you make of it, because it's all about how you spend the day. If you want it to be a day where you celebrate your family and exchange presents, by all means, do it. There is not enough love and enough family time and enough just togetherness in this world. And 2020 really, really made that so. But amen to that, Pam. It is indeed another day to get candy on sale the next day. I love that. All right. And Michael, I do see your poem in the topic, so I'm going to head and post that if you would like to give that a read.
My poem is titled Mortality. Death does not discriminate. It hits both rich and poor. Whether you are young or old, it's waiting at the door. Like a thief that strikes at night, it is ready to pounce. It won't warn you in advance, and it will not announce. I have seen what death can do to those who still remain. When we lose someone we love, there's obviously pain. Life is precious, fragile too. We think we're in command, but we're not, for life is fraught with things that go unplanned. Death can close so many doors, it can open portals to a life beyond this one, even though we are mortals. It is our mortality that makes us who we are. That's why I'll treasure my life, whether death's near or far. Death is nothing we should fear, since God is in control. I believe we all possess an everlasting soul. Until then, let's live for God. That's the reality. I know we'll always exist beyond mortality. And a poem.
Beautiful, beautiful poem, Michael. Thank you for that read. I do agree. Death definitely does not discriminate. Rich or poor, we're all going into the grave. And it reminds me very much of the idea that we're all in a line working our way towards death, and we do not know where we stand. And sometimes it's a little bit more obvious. We've got a family friend who's like 97. So death is definitely knocking at her door. But at the same time, one of my friends just passed away last Saturday at 35 unexpectedly. It pops up when we don't expect things. And yet the question is, how are we going to live this life? Are people going to look at us and know that we died securely, or, you know, or is it going to be like those that approach death and suddenly there's this existential crisis of what comes next? Because we don't, as a society, we don't like to think about it. And so I think this is a beautiful poem that really kind of reflects not only on the uncertainty of the inevitable, but how we will handle it in our here and now. Really beautifully done. Thank you for sharing that. And Faith, what did you think?
I liked when it says, it is our mortality that makes us who we are. That's why I'll treasure my life, whether death's near or far. And I think it's true that the fleeting nature of life is sometimes what makes it more special. And, if we were going to live forever, we might not maybe appreciate each other as much as we do, where if you think this could be the last time that I see someone, you tend to be a little bit, I don't know, maybe nicer, maybe more open about your affection. It just, things are different if you realize that that you don't have them forever. I found that when I was gravely ill and wasn't sure if I was going to survive, all of a sudden it was like I was that drunk girl at the party. I wasn't actually drunk, but like that, like, I love you to like absolutely everyone. Because it was just like you lose that kind of fear to put yourself out there because everything is fragile. And I think recognizing that we are mortals in some ways is a really powerful thing because you appreciate the moments that you do have.
That was a beautiful comment, Faye. So I have to admit the like little goth girl in me squeed a little bit because the way you started it out reminded me of Lestat from the Vampire Chronicles.
Yes!
Because he's like, you know, he's talking, especially if you watch like Queen of the Damned, when he's talking to, I just spaced her name, but when he's talking to her, he was like, you know what makes you beautiful? Your mortality. The idea that you're, you know, that they're going to go away. They're finite. So I got a little distracted with that. So I apologize, but that was a fantastic comment, Faith. Thank you for that. And it's insightful too, because it is true. We are special in the sense our lives are special because they are not forever. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful read. I like what you and Faziana both had to say, and I have to agree, you know, when you express it very well, Michael, when you talk about in your poem how short life is, and so we should live life as if there's the potential to either live long or live a short life, and that, you know, we should not fear death, but rather see it as a next chapter in life. And it's a beautiful spiritual poem on the, you know, acceptance of life and death and on making sure we face our own mortality and making sure we live our life fullest. And like one of my stories, which forgive me if I've told this one to you before, Victoria, but I'd like to tell people about this when the topic of death comes up, is I had a friend who, that you know that voice that comes to your head that says you need to do something. And then this voice in my head said, you need to call so-and-so. And I hadn't talked to her in like close to a year. And as the next morning got a phone call, she had been stabbed to death. It wasn't the next morning, it was a couple of days later. But the point was is you can't ignore those voices. You know, and obviously if I say voices one more time, y'all are going to think I'm crazy, and that's not the kind of voices I'm talking about. It's not a psychotic episode. It's a listening to yourself, you know, listening to that instinct that tells you, or whatever it is that's telling you, you need to listen. If your conscience tells you to reach out to a friend, reach out to a friend.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, sorry about
you.
That.
No. That was a fantastic comment. And no, you haven't told me that story before, I don't think. But you're right. We do need to listen to those things that say, call that person, talk to that person. Because I think there is something that, you know, when you are friends with someone, whether it be you haven't talked to them in years, or days, I think there is a connection that we make that just kind of sticks in our soul. And so, Bruce, I'm so sorry of your loss. But I think that's also such a poignant comment that we need to listen to our intuitions, to our souls, because sometimes we'll end up with opportunities missed. Really beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. Oh, well, Pam just like knocked the wind out of me. I'm all sad for her now.
I'm
so
sorry.
We're going to read a poem.
Right.
No, it's a beautiful, it was such a beautiful comment. And I promise I won't think you're crazy for those voices in your head, but I think everybody has experienced the loss of a loved one in that way. You know, there's always that, I mean, not in that way, but I think we've all had that moment where we get the idea of, you know, I should probably call this person, only to find out something's happened. Even if it isn't passing, it could just be something major. It's that heart-seeking moment of the realization of how far apart sometimes people are from us. And so it just, I think it's relevant, and it was beautiful, and it was vulnerable, and I just appreciate you, Pam. I hope you know that. So our next poem is going to be by Cop, and I'll read this one, and I'm going to apologize because I do not have as beautiful of a reading voice as that man does, but I will give it my best shot. So this is A Prayer for Being Who I Am by Cop. Oh, Lord, you shine your grace on me so that I might understand who I am and who I might be. You ask me to open myself up for life to shine through me so that my world in turmoil might flounder less in its wobble, that I might learn and understand something about myself and about living and loving in this difficult world, in this denseness we call darkness. And so I feel like this is a prayer I need to pray every day. Faith, would you mind starting us off with comments?
I really like the part that says, so that my world in turmoil might flounder less in its wobble. I like that he acknowledges that it's not going to, like, stop floundering. It's still going to wobble, but it might flounder a little bit less. It's like that strength to deal with the wobble, not an expectation that the wobble will stop. I really enjoyed that he put that balance into it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think that's a beautiful statement, because so many times we realize that life feels shaky. It feels out of control. And so for him to recognize that as out of balance, that wobble, I think that was a beautiful comment that pointed to something I think is so easily understandable and so easily relatable. Beautiful comment, Dave. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. I tell you, though, I mean, you did a wonderful read of that, but if I thought it would do any good to lasso Cop and drag him onto a show to read his poems, I would, because that man, you are right. You are right. That man does have a wonderful reading voice. And I like that this is just, it's short and sweet and to the point. It's filled with, I like that the opening line is praise. Oh, Lord, you shine your grace on me so that I might understand. See, all the way through, it's wonderful, but in the end, and about living and loving in this difficult world, in this denseness we call darkness, and, you know, because sometimes it just feels like it's a difficult thing to get through the darkness, and there's such a sense of strength and hope and a renewal of self within these few lines that I think it's just very well done. Oh, and I would like to say good night, Michael, thank you for joining us. You are always appreciated.
Thank you for your comment, Pam. And yes, thank you, Michael, for joining us for the time that you were able to. We always appreciate when people can call in, even if it's not for the full show. Getting to hear poets' voices and their own work in their voices is, I think it just allows us to have a whole new dynamic to the poem, because so many times we read things how we would want. So thank you for joining us and have a good night. And I would agree. I want to lasso Cop and just force him to read poems. Maybe not even just his poems. He has a fantastic, fantastic reading voice, but he also does such a beautiful way of bearing his soul. I've found in his works that he tends to have a very strong voice. There's not a mixed meaning here. And yet there is this gentleness to it, this kind of, the best way I can explain it, because I don't have the words for it, is it reminds me of sitting on a patio overlooking like a meadow within a forest on, you know, maybe a late spring summer day, and you're just kind of rocking in the chair and reflecting on life. It's a reverence of the moment and life as it is. Good, bad, indifferent, life has brought you to this point. And I think specifically I loved, and why I love this poem so much, is that last line, in this denseness we call darkness. It reminds me of fog. And as a teen and a young adult, I always said, you know, my darkness, I had a darkness because of the life and the trauma that was within me. And so I leaned upon my darkness to like dented armor, if you will. It was my defense that I could revel in. Nothing could hurt me because of all these bad things I'd been through, and I wore them like a badge. And I don't think it really was a darkness. I was never lost in it. It was more like a fog that prevented the light from getting through, that prevented me from seeing the full picture, that prevented me from seeing the path in which I was walking, or perhaps the cliff off to my left-hand side. It was a denseness, not a darkness. And I think that if we thought of the trials and the tribulations of life more as a dense fog, a hard, heavy rain-filled storm, that perhaps there might be more hope, because there has been a loss of hope in life across the board. COVID suicide rates went up. I actually talked to a guy who hunts medical murderers, and angels of death were up because the world in which they operate, and they were given a field in which they were able to play. There was a loss of hope, and angels of death tend to, in their mind, believe they're doing mercy killing, loss of hope. And so if we looked at it not so much as darkness, but as denseness, that perhaps we could regain a small semblance of hope, that the fog will lift and that the rain will end, and that we will once more see the light, even if we're only peeking at it through clouds. It's just a beautiful, beautiful brevity that, like I said, I could myself pray daily because I think my soul just needs it. It's a fantastic poem by Kopp. All right. And the next one we've got is Robert J. Peace. I hope I said that right. And Faze, would you mind reading this one for us?
Sure. I don't see it yet. Let me just refresh here. Oh, there it is. On the Long Road to Wisdom by Robert J. Tice. An owl said, ask someone else if this is wisdom that you seek. I thanked her, and I traveled onward, stopping by a mountain peak. I met a thinker at the top and wondered where the wise ones go. He shrugged and laughed and then replied, I have no idea. I wouldn't know. This happened everywhere I went until I recognized my way was only ever mine to make and not for someone else to say. End poem.
I really, really love this poem because we have the thinker who thinks and yet is not, or is wise enough to know not to know everything. The owl who knows that we have to seek, who has traveled far and yet knows that we must travel onward to find it. And finally, that revelation that wisdom is a journey. It doesn't just happen. You're not going to find someone who is wise and says, oh, yes, I am wise, because they are wise enough to know that they have more to learn. It's simple, and yet it's beautiful, and it's poignant. And I think it's just a marvelous understanding of the journey that we take in our journey as a human to understand and to know and to be better. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, this is a wonderful writer. She's in a lot of excellent poetry tonight. And I will tell you that, although I know obviously this doesn't apply to every name, but anytime there's an I before an E, I pronounce it with the long E sound. But that's mainly because I've learned German, and anytime you have the I before the E, it's pronounced with the long E sound. And so just my brain, I'm not saying that necessarily this is the way it's pronounced, but that's how my brain works as far as pronouncing things like that. I really enjoy Robert's writing. It's really intriguing. I met a thinker at the top and wondered where the wise ones go. He shrugged and laughed and then replied, "I've no idea. I wouldn't know." And to me, it shows that difference between people who actually are thinkers, who are so inward on themselves, not in a negative way, but like, you know, how some people just, they're really just focused on thinking and observing, and other people are focused on proving what thinkers they are. And oftentimes the ones they're trying to prove are simply just proving that when they open their mouth, they're an ass. But that's what I get from it. And I think it's a wonderful brevity and just very well done.
Beautiful comment. I had to giggle a little bit at myself because I learned German a long time ago and I never even thought of it that way. I know that's not a comment upon your comment, but yeah, you distracted me, Pam. I'm sitting here and I was like, am I losing my mind? I was like, ik-sie-bedeek. Yep. Nope. She's right. So at least German's consistent. English isn't. Beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. I don't have a better, longer comment upon your comment to grasp. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for that, but thank you. All right, and the next one up we have is Vicki Moore. And Pam, would you be so kind as to read this one for us? Or did I? No, I just have Faith read. Faith, I didn't ask you to comment. Faith, did you want to comment on that last one?
I really liked it. I thought that it was cool that that we tend to think people have the answers. Like when we're kids, we think all the adults have, like, you know, they know what's up. And then you become an adult and you're like, I don't know. you look around for a more adult adult and they don't exist. everyone kind of expects people to know things that maybe nobody really does. You know, we're seeking that wise person and thinking that person at the top of the hill is there because they know things. You know, that person went up looking for a person who knows things. They're also searching. It amuses me because it's sadly true that, like, I think so many of us are seeking someone to tell us our path, and, like, you do have to be the one who figures it out because nobody really knows. And I like that. And he did it in a playful way, too.
I love that you brought on the adultier adult kind of idea, because there's plenty of times where I look at my life and I'm just like, I need an adult, but unfortunately that adult is me. And yeah, my daughters will look at me sometimes, especially my 3-year-old, and I get those, but why, mommy? And it's like, child of mine, I do not know. You're going to have to ask somebody else. Let me look it up. But you're right. You know, ultimately it comes down to this idea that we are not going to know everything. Maybe as teens we thought we did, but as we grow older and wiser, we realize wisdom is not the amount of knowledge we have, but the recognition of the knowledge that we lack. Beautiful comment, Dave. Very insightful and just fantastic. So thank you. And to put Pam on the spot finally again, Pam, would you be so kind as to read this next poem by Vicki Moore? Human-Shaped Hole?
I would be happy to. This is Human-Shaped Hole by Vicki Moore, and it goes like this. There was nothing to say, just a human-shaped hole in me that I touched every day since you left me. A butterfly so beautiful that landed on my finger just for a moment and then flew away. A shooting star flying across the sky just to quickly disappear. The shape of you is still here inside my heart, lingering in my soul. I touch it every day to keep my memories alive. even though you are not. End poem.
That was a beautiful comment. I think, to me, it really kind of reminds us the way that people touch us and touch our lives, and how it can leave this, like, hole in our heart. Actually, when my friend lost one of her babies, there was a few days that went by. It's been 3 weeks now, and she was talking to me the other week, and I have to be this safe place for her, you know, the place that's not going to judge her, and I'm just there to love her and support her, because that's what you do. And she said, you know, I really, really miss Wyatt, and sometimes I wish I was dead so that I could be with him, which would leave the other baby. And all I could respond was, you know, I think that's really, really understandable, because I'm sure there is a Wyatt-shaped hole in your soul. It's a little piece of you that is gone, and it can't ever be filled, and it can't ever be replaced, because nothing is ever going to fit that spot the way it's supposed to. And to me, Vicky really just kind of captures that beautifully, and sadly captures that. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I'm really touched by your comment, so I'm a bit lost within that. But I loved the shape part too. The shape of you is still here, and I think that sometimes you have to let yourself touch on that grief to remember that bit of that person. You know, some people shy away from their grief and they kind of cut it out, and I think you have to be able to recognize that there's that person missing, and that it hurts, to be able to keep that spark of them alive in you, and to still feel that connection is important. So I really like that it recognized that.
Sorry, guys, I was talking on mute for a hot second there. But that was a fantastic point, or fantastic comment, Dave. And it does. We do have those people that touch us. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. This is a beautiful, heartfelt brevity. And, you know, it does, just it's wonderful how she mentions how she feels empty without this person. And then touches on the butterfly and the shooting stars and all those things that you start to notice. And there's, to me, almost a tone here of when you get to that point where you start looking at the things around you and start thinking about the person less and less, and you almost start to get this kind of guilt, like because you're going on with your life and you're living life, and you're all of a sudden you'll realize that it's been like days, weeks, maybe even over, you know, months since you really thought about the person. And you want to just keep poking those memories to make sure that they stay with you. And that's what I feel a lot of what this poem is about. And it's just a wonderful brevity on grief and love, and it's very well done.
I think that was an awesome comment, Pam. And I love that you brought up that the moving on, because I think so often when we are grieving and when we do grieve the loss of a loved one, we seem to have this idea that if life doesn't stop with them, we've somehow dishonored the memory. And that's not the case. If someone really wanted you to die with them, I'm not sure I would really call that love. But yet there is that guilt that kind of lingers. And so I think you catching that and catching the thought that life has moved on and there's this, oh, I forgot. For a moment, I forgot. That kind of pause, I think you catching that was just beautiful. So thank you, Pam, for that. That was a fantastic comment. And up next, we have If Only by Heavenly Angel, and I'll read this one. If only, alone in the beginning, God, with a simple touch, created man in his own image. Him with the warmth of his light, he accepts us with undeniable love, with open arms. If only we would embrace him as well. End of poem. And Pam, would you start us off on comments?
Absolutely. I really like Heavenly Angel's writing. Oh, wow. Alone in the beginning, God with a simple touch created man in his own image. I like that. I like that she starts with alone in the beginning. And you know, like many of us, I think, you know, whatever gods or God deities are out there, you know, it's just nobody wants to be alone. And, you know, it's I like how just in a few lines she describes creation as a spiritual element. She describes the love and acceptance, and she gives us the opportunity to see God's human side and the idea that he created us because he was lonely. And I'm just an excellent write and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. The idea that God is lonely and therefore created us. I don't think we always think of creation in that way, that an eternal God could be lonely and therefore created a finite creation in his image. It's thought-provoking. So thank you for sharing that. And Faith, what did you think?
I liked the warmth of his light. Because there's something about, like, sunlight or firelight that has, like, that, I don't know, I associate it with, like, love almost. There's, like, this glowy, warm feeling that you get with natural light. And so I like the idea of that being, like, a divine feeling that is shared.
I love that focus on the warmth, because there is that idea of being alone. And to have this being who wants to share that warmth, who wants to share that love, and yet he is surrounded by the cold nothingness, quite literally nothingness. And so he makes this creation. I think that's really quite phenomenal. And I do agree with you, Pam. Like, Heavenly really has this way of writing that it's short, it's sweet, and yet at the same time it paints this beautiful picture that makes you sit and think upon it. There's a lot to this poem. Alone in the beginning, God with a simple touch created man in his own image. It makes me think that if we are created in God's image, if we, you know, take the Christian God, if we are created in God's image, what does that mean? We have the desire to create, the ability to make our own choices. We have the ability to do infinite good and show love and show mercy. Yet, he is also a God of wrath. And we've seen that, how we create vast devastation at the impression of the smallest light. We are created in his image. And yet he wishes to embrace us with the good of him. He doesn't want to be the God of wrath. At least I don't think. He wants to be a loving, undeniably loving God who accepts all of his creation. If only we would embrace him as well. And it reminds me, 2-year-old, because when she doesn't want something, she is viciously against it. She was trying to fall asleep earlier, and so she'd nestle down and she'd close her eyes, and then she'd get mad at herself and wake herself up because she didn't want to sleep. At the same time, you know, when she was being forced to wake up and she didn't want to wake up, she also was very angry It's so easy to say, well, you know, let me just love you. I just want to love you. But we as people often are like injured cats. We will strike out at anything we do not like. And so if only we would embrace them. Because if we truly have free will, we have the choice not to. To me, it's a short, beautiful poem that really actually makes you stop and think and consider what is being said. Again, regardless of faith, there are gods of love in just about every religion. There are gods of wrath in just about every religion. The beauty of faith is that ultimately there is something bigger than us out there that cares for us more than we probably will ever know. It's really just beautiful write by Heavenly Angel. And next up, we have Factual Fallacy by Flower Muse. And Faze, would you be, I got to post it, but would you be so kind as to read this one for us next?
Sure. Factual Fallacies by Flower Muse. Wooden fences divide us from each other. One huge ocean slowly dying, millions of plastic bottles. Fresh air, factory pollution, dead on arrival. Wildfires destroys nature's dwellings, climate change. Variety, products, choice, we provide the hate. The golden rule in this place and time, an unwanted fallacy. Beautifully cold, the look and feel of a gun, spelling warm blood. Business of lying makes sense to prostitutes and politicians. Honor your parents. They will show the way, or not. Be careful who you love. They may not be the one. Be true to yourself, for there are no others closer. End poem.
Oh, I've only recently got to discover Flower Muse, and I have to say I am just loving his work. There's these lies we tell us. Currently building a fence on my rental property. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but they say fences make the best neighbors. But the problem is a fence doesn't actually cover your whole property. You're still going to run into your neighbor at the mailbox, along the street, walking, going for an afternoon walk. There's still going to be those annoyances. And yes, a fence might make us blind to them, but it doesn't actually divide the feelings that we have. If you don't have a good relationship with your neighbor, a fence might make it a little bit more bearable, but you've already been divided. We have these huge bodies of water, oceans that are dying. We call them beautiful and we say that we're working to make them better, and yet the pollution never stops. We don't do anything to pollution to end, and the water and the air to suffer for it. We've polluted our air to the extent that we're slowly poisoning the planet on which we live. We're having wildfires from climate change. We're having hate uprising, and yet society as a whole says treat others the way you want to be treated, and then no one does, because someone else is always going to have to make that first move. Someone else is always going to have to be the bigger person, because we're all cold and we're all seeking warmth and blood runs hot. We are told to trust our government when politicians actively take lobbies and bribes. No, let's be honest. What politician hasn't worked with a corporation before and probably gotten a kickback that isn't really available? You know, they lie to us, and yet here we are. We keep saying, oh, no, this person's going to make a difference. Our parents we're supposed to honor because they're supposed to know better, and yet we have parents whose children are taken away because police come on a wellness check and they find babies in diapers that have been, that haven't been changed in days. You have to ask, how can you honor a parent like that? And marriages fall apart. I have a friend who, she's been married like 4 or 5 times at this point. My sister has a friend who's been married several times at this point. And here we are in our 30s, and you see these people who cannot seem to find a healthy relationship. And you have to ask why. And is it because we've lost the meaning of love and commitment, and all we latch onto is the butterflies and lust, and once that's gone, it's all gone? Or is it because there's actually something wrong in our society that people are, as a whole, degrading in their personality and their characteristics and their understanding of what a partner is? And so we're left with that final stanza, to be true to ourselves, because there's nobody else that we can rely on. There's nobody else that's really going to have your back the way that you will, because society has set it up that it no longer takes a tribe to raise a child. Every parent is they are, and no one else has a right to criticize. We've systematically destroyed our morals, our ideas.
I'm sorry, did you say my name? Did you say anybody's name?
I think maybe Victoria dropped. She kind of cut out mid-sentence.
Okay. Yeah, it did actually seem like an awkward time then, but I have to admit I was kind of in a different zone, and so I wasn't quite sure, but yes, she did drop. You didn't make a comment yet, did you, Afasiana?
No.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Okay. I thought this was really thought-provoking, and I mean, Victoria touched on so much of it, but I definitely see the division if the, when we're talking about the wooden fences, and I think that's metaphorical too for the, you know, the artificial borders that we create amongst, between nations, between maybe social classes, between all different things. We create division as a society in so many ways, and the nature definitely has suffered. I mean, there are wildfires like crazy around here, like every year the last few years, and it's scary, and you definitely see the pollution taking over the world, except actually this past year I find I've seen studies and things where pollution dropped significantly during the time that we were kind of shut down because of COVID, and it's like that shows us that it's doable to fix things. I mean, maybe we don't want to shut down to the extent that we have, but it can make a difference if we reduce certain industrial things. In only a year, there was an impact. So I thought that was something to think about.
Well, I didn't get to hear the whole comment, only the last like 30 seconds, but I'm sure it was fantastic. And I apologize for that, guys. I was thinking I just did a fantastic comment and that nobody was knew what to say. And nope.
No, you did. You did. So, you had quite the comment.
We were like, oh.
I'm thinking, and I was like, well, I'm not repeating that. I'll leave him a written comment. So.
I think we heard most of it. We just knew you had dropped because it was in like kind of a like almost like a middle of a sentence type drop where it was like, you know.
It's always got to happen. I swear, every time I do a show, there's got to be some point in the show where my phone's like, you ma'am have said enough, and it just stops. And I'm just like, okay, that's fine. That's cool. Technology.
I totally get that. Same thing here.
So did Pam, I know Faye's got a comment, and Pam, did you get a chance to comment?
No, I passed the ball to Afasiana. So
would you like to comment, or?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first of all, I like what Afasiana had to say about the wildfires and the climate change and how it affects nature, and, you know, the studies that have been done on how we can prevent, you know, pollution. You know, I like what you had to say, Victoria, about politicians. I think there's a particularly strong stance in here. It says business alignment makes sense to prostitutes and politicians. And then I like where it says honor your parents. They will show you the way or not. Be careful who you love. They may not be the one. I like that both of those stanzas like lead into each other, and the idea that, you know, yeah, there's a certain amount of respect you should give your elders, but then eventually if they prove to be the type of people that haven't earned respect, you know, if you live with abusive parents and you grow up to be an adult and they continue to be negatively emotional people, you know, move on. You know, if you think somebody's the one, be careful. Take your time with love and relationships if need be, because, you know, you don't want to end up giving your heart away to somebody who isn't going to appreciate it. I love how this whole poem works, that this poem works as a whole, and yet each stanza is practically a little just nugget of wisdom in itself. So I really like that. It's very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam. And you're right. I don't know how much you guys got to hear into my comments, so I'm just going to assume that you didn't hear this part. But that, too, was kind of my takeaway, that, you know, we have these people that we love. We have these parents that we're told to honor and respect. And yet, so often, they don't. And there's that question of the degradation of people, of parents, of relationships, morals, commitment. And how do we change that? And so I think that was a very poignant part that you pointed out, Pam, because it does kind of leave us feeling like the only person that we can trust is ourselves. And that is a very lonely way to approach life. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. All right. And next up, we have Simply Miss Them by Misty Day. And I will give this one a read. Simply miss them. Empty nest, eggs hatched, birds flown, adult kids, can't come home, have to work, can't visit. I miss them so, my little starlings, my little darlings, how they've grown, tears fall, I miss them so. End poem. And Faith, would you mind starting us off on comments?
I feel like my mother would love this poem. I think it's really sweet. You know, you have that connection to your family, and I don't have children myself, but I can imagine that it doesn't matter how old they are. You still want to have them close. You still want to have that connection, and it's really hard to have them move on and have their own life. I live quite far away from my family, and I know right now they're really struggling with, like, I can't visit the way that I have been. And then I think it has this whole, like, cats in the cradle kind of thing. It's like they're too busy now to do it, and probably when they were really young, maybe the parents were the ones who were too busy. And I like the bird metaphor, having to deal with the little chicks not being in the nest anymore. I thought it was sweet.
That was a beautiful comment, and I feel that. My dad calls me his long lost daughter, because my siblings are fairly dependent upon my parents. Like, if my sister's oven doesn't work, she'll call my mom. And my brother calls my parents every night at 7, like clockwork. And so, yet, I'm the daughter that they might go several days without speaking to, because I just get caught up in life and busy and what have you. But I'm now the one now. I used to live on the completely opposite side of the country from them. I now live the closest, and so they actually get to see me the most, because I finally am close enough that I can go and I can visit them. And so this really reminds me of like the struggle that my parents, like your space, have had, where life just doesn't allow people to see each other. There's always that idea of, oh, next year we will. Oh, you know, maybe together, maybe this or that. And yet time continues to leech on and we forget that sometimes the coop in which we've flown has left the mother with an empty nest. And there is a sadness. As a mother myself, I fear the day that my children will no longer need me. And yet that is my duty as a mother, is to make sure that they will be self-sufficient, strong, healthy individuals. And it just leaves this hard dichotomy that we have to reconcile, both as a mother who has children and then thinking of my mother whose children have all flown. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And Pam, what did you think?
I really like this. She put a lot of emotion into just a few words. I mean, instantly, you know, with the words empty nest, that this is a woman whose kids have grown, even before you get to adult kids. It very much reminds me of the end of the song, the Cats in the Cradle, where, you know, the father, but the whole song. I don't get the impression that this is somebody that ignored their kids, but rather that their whole life, their whole heart was put into raising their children. And then they kind of feel lost once they're gone. But it reminds me of the end of that song where the father wants to then spend time with the adult son, but the adult son had grew up to be just like the dad and said, no, I can't, I'm busy. So definitely an impactful write and very well done.
Well, I love that comment, Pam, and I love that you remind us that so often our children will take on traits that we teach them. So if a parent is always busy and they ignore their child, eventually that child will more than likely become busy and ignore their parents. And it's a cycle, intentionally break. That was a beautiful insight, Pam. So thank you for that. And up next, we have Heart Was Needed by Vancouver Rose. And Pam, would you take this read?
I would be happy to. And this is Heart Was Needed by Vancouver Rhodes. And it goes like this. I truly wish I had two hearts, or hearts could be divided in two, that were possible, brother dear. I'd have had a spare for you. You patiently waited a year in a hospital for a heart, but yours was worn out and couldn't wait, and it tore mine apart. End poem.
This is such a sad poem. There are so many organs in the body. I mean, there's not like a ton of them, but like you have two kidneys, you have two eyeballs, you have two ears. The liver regenerates. Your bone marrow can be given away and you can still keep going. There's organs in the body that we can give while we are still alive that can help save another life. And yet the heart is not one of them. And when we lose someone, it shatters. I think they actually found that there is stress that comes on the heart when you are heartbroken, that there's actually a stress that affects you. And so people actually have died from a broken heart because of the physiology of what happens to our body when we lose someone that we love. And so this reminds me of that. This reminds me of that deep, deep hurt from being helpless to sit and watch as someone we love struggles and then eventually passes away. And oh, what we would give to give up a piece of ourselves just for them to stay. It's heartbreaking. It really is. It's simple, it's beautiful, and yet it sits with you. Just a really beautiful piece. And Faith, what did you think?
This is definitely an emotional piece. I feel like the emotion of it really hits me more than the form itself. But I really liked the way that she used the tore mine apart at the end there, because you know, one heart being damaged can really, like, metaphorically hurt the other person's heart. I thought that was a clever way of wording such a painful situation. And yeah, it is difficult that there are some organs you can help with, and then you feel so helpless in the case of the heart. I have a friend who has, she's had cancer since she was a small child, but she, both of her parents have given her a kidney. I think you need a transplant every 10 years or something like that. I can't remember exactly the time, but she got one when she was little, and then she had another one fairly recently, and each of her parents gave her a kidney. And I'm sure that if it was a heart, then they wish that they could give it. And it's just, it's such a powerful thing to be able to help someone, or to the pain of not being able to. I see in her AN she pleads for people to be organ donors, and I think that this poem is a good method to get that message across.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was a beautiful comment. Thank you so much, Faison, for sharing that, because I don't think people always understand the impact or the concern and fear that people who are dependent upon others for things like a kidney or a liver or a heart or an eye really go through. So thank you for sharing that. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness, yeah, this is definitely one that brings tears to your eyes. It has wonderful rhyme and flow, but more important, I mean, it just really, wow, it just hits hard. Because in like those eight lines, you feel the love that was between her and her brother, but not only that, but there's the fear, the anxiety, and the hope, thinking every day that maybe, just maybe, this would be the day, and then it's too late. Just a powerful brevity, and very well done.
Beautiful words, Tim. Thank you. All right, and next up, we are going to read Starlight by Babbler. And Faith, would you give this one a read for us?
Yes. Starlight by Babbler. Black road slick with ice, 8:30 on a December night, posing as an everyday drive bordered with 6-foot ditches. Big Dipper above the slip between rubber and asphalt, journeying sidelong into the shallow ravine, glass shattered, glitter constellations born at the momentous push of your body, hurled into the bank, a crack at the stem of the skull, launched into galactic grace, red and white fireworks on a roadside, hot iron stench soaking into the freeze, pieces salvaged, liver, cornea, kidneys, a last gift to the mortal realm. Your sparkle blinks in the winter sky, a distant light burrowed into my memory, the cleft in my chin, the beating of my flesh, your starlight that shines in droplets on my pillow. And poem.
To me, this is, it's a hard, hard poem to read. This idea of how life unexpectedly happens. You know, they went off for a drive, and yet somehow it is ended in a way that now this person is no more. Their organs have been given to people, and they can be found in these little places, and yet they are truly helpless to have prevented the loss of this person. And she does such a beautiful job of unexpectedly taking us on this journey to going through this car crash in which she describes it. Let's see if I can find it. Big dipper above the slip between rubber and asphalt. Where is it? Dang it, I'm missing it. But, oh, the glass shatters, littered constellations, born at the momentous push of your body. I mean, that's such a beautiful, and yet what we are talking about is someone crashing through a windshield. It's beautiful, and yet it is so heartbreaking because the end of it is they cracked their skull at the stem, death. They were launched into galactic grace. They've passed away. And as these ambulances, the red and white firework on the roadside, there's that hot iron stench as they take the body, bring it to the hospital, and harvest the organs so that others might live. Their last gift to mortality is, it's heartbreaking because it is talking about someone who unexpectedly passed away and gave every last piece of themselves. And yet, there she is left mourning upon her pillow. It's beautiful and it's hard. And it's so vulnerable at the same time. It's breathtaking. And Pam, what did you think?
First of all, I may have to end up having a talk with you and Aphasiana about having shows with poetry that makes me want to cry.
I am right there with you, Pam. I'm right there with you.
Right? Oh, my goodness. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Aphasiana's show, wow. The poetry she had on there last night, it was like one after the other that was just pulling at your heart and punching you in the gut. And that's how I feel about this one. I mean, I always like Babbler's poetry. She has a wonderful way of expressing herself that's honest, raw. You know, she puts herself out there with metaphors and imagery that is relatable and yet worded, you know, like uniquely put. And, you know, that she takes us through the moment of the crash, the shatter of the glass, like glittered constellation born at the momentous push of your body. I mean, beautiful wording for such a tragic event. And your starlight that shines in droplets on my pillow, you know, those moments that you just can do nothing but cry and remember. Wow, this is just absolutely beautiful. It's a wonderful write and very well done.
Absolutely. And yeah, she really does have those ways of beautifully capturing heartbreak in ways I don't think we always quite expect. So thank you for that, Pam. And I'm sorry to pull at your heartstrings when you have less than 48 hours to recuperate, but it's just so good. And it's a good indication of poetry that just hits you where it hurts. So thank you for that, Pam. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, the wording was so beautiful. It took a while for it to hit me what it was about. You know, as I was reading it out loud, I'm focusing on the words, trying not to slip on my words, and it was so beautiful in the descriptions, like that part someone had just talked about, glittered constellation born at the momentous push of your body. It sounded gorgeous, so it the tragedy of it kind of took my breath away as I realized what it was actually describing. I've never seen a moment like a car crash described in such beauty and yet, you know, tear you apart because of what it actually means. This was a devastating poem, and yet it was so beautifully crafted that I don't even know how to feel. I'm speechless.
You know, and I appreciate that you said that it's so beautifully crafted that you don't know how to feel, because I think that's especially those unexpected deaths. It is that moment where life just hasn't really sunk in yet, and you don't know how to feel. You have this knowledge, and yet you have to sit there and think about it before it sinks in and really impacts you. And I think, to me, that is a part of the poem that she uses so effectively, because it takes a moment for you to stop and sit with it and sink in and reread it and then go, damn, beautiful comment, Faith. Thank you. And up next we have, and we've got about 9 minutes, so this may be the last one, but if we don't get to go through all the comments, or we don't get on to the next one, do please go and leave a message for John, as all these posts, he's just a fantastic job. All right, so this is The Resonant Murmur of Boundless Night by John Macapalu, and I really hope I said his last name right, and I'll take this read. Full blue moon, the only fixed point, for one lost, idolently past echo of your laughter. I try to trace the intangibility of your kisses, that burning that comes when summer's evenings pass, not with remote longing, stricken, then broken, fragments of our story of chained tears, how your caress dredged so deep, my now shallow heart overflowing now with torrential regret. End poem. And Faith, could you start us off on comments?
No, I always enjoy John's poetry. He has like this flow to it that almost makes it seem simple, but it's not. Like there's often layers to what he says, but it's so accessible in the way that it's written. There's something about it that just feels so natural, like conversational. Fragments of our story of chained tears. I love the way that's worded. And torrential regret. So you think of like torrential rain. The regret is so like overwhelming and just like everywhere, and you can barely get through it. I think that he has excellent word choices.
That was a fantastic comment. And I love that you mentioned that it seems like a conversation, because it does. It's kind of that free thought that overflow in those quiet moments. That was just a really beautiful, beautiful comment. So thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness, this is just a beautiful brevity on the loving and losing and the regrets of not having that more time. I don't know, just it really just wonderfully layered. I like that. It's very well done.
Oh, and I would agree. To me, it's kind of disarming initially, because go immediately to this loss of a relationship, to the regret of a lost relationship. And yet that's exactly what's going on. There is that loss that we're sitting and ruminating and being reminded of, you know, the touch, the kiss, the way that they've ground themselves into our hearts and doesn't seem to escape, doesn't seem to leave. And we're just kind of left with it. We have to live with it, figure it out. It's just a really fantastic piece. And we do have 5 more minutes, so I'm going to try and get one more poem in. So again, if we don't get through all the comments, stop over at this poet. This is Shalkin with Chasm of Death. And Pam, could you give us a read of this one?
Absolutely. Here we go. And hold on, I'm sorry. Oh, come on. All right. Chasm Death by Shalkin. And it goes like this. Make a clean living or take a dirt nap. We'll sample 6 feet of nothing when the sky turns black. I'd take a needle in my arm or a knife in my back when the endless night comes, co-engineer, collapse. These fragments of life that encapsulate the dead, mornings are for mourning, every minute filled with lead, every cell in the broken body, bone body filled with dread, every river runs red from your capillary beds. Awake a slumber, sleep, keep the dead embedded deep, tread light or sickly sidle right inside of this dream. Deceased horse descends and proceeds to get beat, and suns don't remember to shine. Once the night is truly dark, the void devoid of hope of spark, fires buried in question marks, will jump into the chasm. End poem.
Oh, I really love this poem. To me, there's this kind of moment where we understand that life is kind of what we make of it, that we can make a clean living, that we can do our best, or we can do things that are going to put us 6 feet under. Again, that needle into our arm, a knife into our back, there's these ideas that we're engineering the life that we want. And there are decisions that we will make that will impact that. To me, this poem really kind of calls us to evaluate how we approach life, how we approach the decisions that we are making, the choices that we are making, that lead us to that point where we will jump into the chasm, that leaves us with the questions of where are we going? Did we do a good enough life, or did we dig our own grave? I want to read it a few more times, but it's just to me, it's a fantastic piece that in a very gentle way calls for self-evaluation. And Faith, what did you think?
I loved it. I love mornings are for mourning, every minute filled with lead. And the mourning part is a good play on words with the homonyms. But every minute filled with lead, when you're feeling really depressed, everything feels so heavy. Like you can barely move your limbs because it feels like it's something physically pushing you down when you're in that really deep depression. So if you're in mourning, every minute filled with lead is such a good way to put that. And then, you know, the saying, beat a dead horse, is made so fancy and interesting with deceased horse descends and proceeds to get beat. This is incredible. I thought that she did an amazing job at wording things in interesting ways, and it hits me. Like, I feel like I got punched in the stomach with this in like, the best possible way.
I love that you just mentioned the dead horse, because honestly, I didn't even catch that. I think that was such an insightful comment. So thank you so much for that, Faith. And Pam, I'm going to ask if you could have a moment, if you could leave them a comment. I too will leave them a comment, but we are right at the end of our show. So I would like to remind people to please check out the contests that are being hosted by all the different shows. You can find this in the topics board of LNP. Of course, we do have shows every night of the week, so be sure to check those out. We've got some really awesome shows, like Faith herself here. She does have the Double Helix show and Part Sinner, Part Saint. And then, of course, Pam is the Kevin of LNP. She is everywhere. Just know that and don't fuck with her. Thank you, everyone who called in. Michael, Faith, Pam for being here to keep the show running smoothly-ish. And just everything that you all do. The poems were amazing. The poets are amazing. And, of course, you all are just awesome. Thank you for being here, and I hope everybody's week is awesome. Love you all. Good night.